This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and this is the place for local talk. You get to learn about local happenings, local initiatives, ideas, institutions, and individuals. Today, I'm excited. Just about every day I'm excited to talk with you, but today I've got guests in the audience that do something fun that is near and dear to my heart. We're going to start the show by talking about a production that's coming to the city just next week. So a lot of people did not realize, but I do have a background in theater, so I have a soft spot for theater productions. Of course, we've had some theater guests here at Newsmakers, but in the studio, live with us today, a couple of actors, Zach Defoe and Emily Carlson from LA are here today to talk about the production they're bringing for one night only.
Yep.
One night only next week. So welcome to the studio, Zach.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So you're kind of a local kid.
I am. Yes. Born and raised here in Salem.
And you're South? You're
South Salem Saxon.
You're a Saxon.
Yep, once a Saxon, always a Saxon, for sure.
Now you live in L.A., but you're an actor.
Yep.
Did you act when you were Saxon?
I did not. I was a three-sport athlete, you know, was really busy with that, and then it took college for me to find that acting was my thing. So,
well, who polluted your mind with such kind of thing?
I know, right?
You went to what college?
I went to Western Oregon.
Oh,
yeah.
And that's where you decided, hey, I'm going to take some classes in the arts.
Yep.
And caught
exactly.
a bug.
Exactly. Yep. Caught the bug big time.
That is awesome. And Emily, welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
It's nice to have you. I think you might be one of the most charming people we've ever had on the show.
Wow. He's so good. He just wants me to come back tomorrow.
That's right. Emily, you are originally from Colorado. You told me before the show, but you are also in LA and you guys have acted together.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about this production and you're bringing up for one night only in Salem.
Yeah, so it's called Gruesome Playground Injuries.
That's the name of the
play. That is the name of the play.
It sounds a little bit like my childhood. Okay.
Exactly. That's kind
That's
of what we're
point.
Hoping for.
That's the point.
Yep. And we did it, 4 years ago?
I think it was 4 years.
Yeah, we'll say three and a half years.
Three and a half.
More than one, for sure. We did it down in L.A. It was very successful and really, really well. And had an opportunity to do something here at the Elsinore. And decided, you know, let's do this and let's get the community to see this. And I think it's something that's going to be really, really cool and that hasn't been really seen around here before.
Well, I think the buzz is already out. I mean, there's a lot of pre-sold tickets already.
Yeah, which is pretty nice.
So that's very exciting to have you back. Does it give you a little bit of nervous, like coming home, as it were, and the people that know your folks and knew your grandparents and all these things, they're coming, well, we're going to check out and see what Zach is and what he's become.
No, I'm actually really excited to see that, actually.
Oh, so I'm the nervous one for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm nervous to see your grandparents in the audience.
Yeah. No, I'm just really excited about that. I think that's something really cool. I mean, I've been gone for, 7.5, almost 8 years. And so people haven't really gotten to see what I've been doing down there.
Mm-hmm.
And to finally get to bring something up here that went really successful down there. And show people that I'm not, you know, just hiding, living in a shack down somewhere on the beach in L.A., actually putting in the work and going after my dream. So I'm really excited for people to see that.
So this is happening at the Elsinore Theater.
Yes, sir.
So people, if you want tickets, it's elsinoretheater.com. Elsinoretheater.com. Gruesome play, and we just have one night to catch it.
Yeah, they're just...
How did you end up with a Saturday night available at the Elsinore?
I know, right? You know... They haven't done a theatrical play there in a very long time. I think it's been about 15, 20 years since they've done a non-musical play there.
Wow.
And so they're a little nervous about it a little bit, I think. And so they just kind of wanted to dip their toe into the pool a little bit and see how it would go, how the turnout would go, how the play would turn out, you know. And if it goes well, hopefully we can do some more.
So this is a trial balloon. Is that what you're saying? Is that why we're just getting one night and not a weekend?
Yes.
It's probably availability of the theater as well.
Yeah, availability's been a little tough, so they just kind of snuck us in there, which I'm totally happy about. I like kind of just showing up out of nowhere, kind of blowing the socks off of folks. And
All right, Zach, tell us
something different.
Actually, Emily, tell us about the play itself. And what character do you play?
I play a girl named Kayleen. And we meet Doug and Kayleen. So it's an only two-person cast. And we meet them at the age of 8. So, and then we travel with them through time, basically. And you get to be part of this kind of memory play of seeing them at different ages. And we get to see this best friendship unfold, this kind of love story that's filled with gruesome playground injuries. Yeah.
All right. So you get to play this character at many different ages in their life.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So how do you manage that? Or I don't know if you want to give away any secrets, but are there costume changes? Is there makeup changes? And how does that work?
Yes, many. And actually, this play is designed to only be done on stage. So the two actors, as it says in the actual play, you never leave the stage, and all costume changes as well as makeup applications. There's a lot of wounds in this play.
Yes.
So there's a lot of taking wounds on and off, but it's all supposed to be done. So you're kind of breaking that fourth wall for the audience, and they kind of come along on this journey with you and see what happens.
So tell us a little bit about the author. What do we know about the author?
His name's Raheeb Joseph. Hasn't done too many other things, but
His last play was Robin Williams' last play that he did on Broadway.
Yes.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
What was that called? Something in the Jungle. But yeah, he's an amazing playwright. And he first started, I think this was one of his first plays, but they did it at a little theater in Texas. And it just kept snowballing. And then from there, I think it made its way to Broadway.
All right. What's the date of the play?
October 19th.
October 19th.
That's 7 p.m.
A week from Saturday.
Yeah. Ooh, crazy.
You sure it's not 6 p.m.? Maybe doors open at 6.
Yes, doors open at 6. Yes, yes, doors open at 6.
Tickets range from $15 to $30. Yep. Gruesome playground injuries, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the subtitle is A Love Story Through Time.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so how old are these characters by the time they're done? What's the span? You got to play an 8-year-old.
8 to about 40.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
40, yeah.
That's a good stretch.
It's pretty good stretch. Pretty fun.
All right, Zach, tell us about your community connections, a little bit of history. Let's out you a little bit to our audience.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad is the head football coach at South Salem High School. Been there for a really long time, since I was in like third grade. Before that, he was the head coach at McKay. So been around the school district a little bit. Grandfather, Guido Calderazzo, also was at every school pretty much in Salem as a principal or a athletic director or coach or what have you. So, pretty indoctrinated into the Salem Kaiser School District.
I can see how Emily would be feared on your behalf. So, if you're new to the community, if you're new to the community, Guido is beloved. He's one of Salem's most beloved leaders, educators, individuals that we've seen in our community since I've been here, and I've been here almost 30 years. So, first of all, congratulations, you lucky guy, to born in such a great family.
I know. I'm very blessed, very lucky dude.
And also for sure. To have developed new talents and new skills and an opportunity to come back to your hometown and put them on display.
Yep.
I think I'd be nervous if I were you. I'm not even going to my class reunion, right?
I just had my tenure in June, so.
Yeah, how did that go?
It was great. I mean, I was one of the only ones who didn't have a kid, but it was phenomenal to see everybody. Everybody looks the same. Everybody's doing a really good job in life. So, and a lot of them are coming to the play, so I'm really excited for them to come see it too.
Are you, either one of you, willing to share other things that are happening in your life in Los Angeles, in your pursuit? I know there's lots of different kinds of actors, actually.
Yeah.
There are some that, went to university and learned to act, and they look what real acting is. So every time, a boxer says, I think when I'm done in the ring, I'm going to be an actor, you just kind of roll your eyes.
Yeah.
Like, what you mean is you want to be a celebrity.
Yes.
But there are people that really like local, regional theater and staying on stage. There's some people that want to be movie stars.
Yep.
And there's some people who just want to pay the rent and do some commercials and things like that. How would you describe yourself, Emily?
Ooh, all of the above. No, I trained really hard. I started when I was a kid. And then I studied in London at a theater program there. And then I was also in the Bay Area. I was at ACT at the American Conservatory Theater.
Really?
And I... I loved doing theater, but I'd always wanted to see what film was all about. So that's why I chose LA. But I think Zach and I have worked together on and off for 5 or 6 years, and we met in a really wonderful acting class and grew a lot together in there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll shamelessly say, you know, this guy's, he's on a television show that's now on Amazon Prime.
Awesome.
Doesn't like to say those things. And but I do all those things. I do all the things you got to do to pay the bills too. So commercials, industrials I've done, you know, you'll see me in an airplane tutorial video somewhere. But, and then I started directing this year too. So I actually just finished my first big directing project that was for a documentary.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. You could stay the whole hour. Right. Zach, how about you describe yourself as an actor?
Yeah, yeah. I'd have to say I'm a little bit of all of the above. You know, went down to LA, kind of bright eyed, bushy tailed, had no clue really what I wanted to do except for what I wanted to be in Star Wars. That was pretty much my main goal, right? I'm with you. Fell in love with the craft. Like, I love just the craft of acting and being able to have that great power of being able to touch people emotionally. I think probably on stage is a little easier to do that than it is on screen because you're right there with people. But I just love doing this stuff. You know, like she said, I have a show on Amazon Prime. It's called Zach and Dennis, How It All Began. Which in and of itself, I could probably talk to you guys for like an hour about because it kind of just happened on happenstance and just snowballed, kind of like how this thing did. So
Amazon Prime, Zach and Dennis, How It All began.
Yeah, yeah. It, we did it for a film festival at our acting school that she and I met at, and it went really well. They told us to film another one, so we filmed another one. That went really well, so they told us to film a third one. We filmed a third one, and then a distribution company hit us up and said, hey, we'd love to get you guys on Amazon, and now I'm on Amazon,
which is so kind of
cool. Yeah.
That's what I'll be doing after the 49ers. No, let's see. It's Thursday. Who's on Thursday night? I don't even know this week.
Monday night, it's Cleveland and San Francisco tonight.
Oh, that was last Monday.
Oh, that's right. Last Monday. Yeah, yep.
The travel.
It's
the travel. So you guys, I imagine there's limited set pieces for you guys to put this on the road.
Oh, right? Yes.
And produce it and so forth. You got to have the lighting and sound, and yep. The Elsinore's taking care of that for you.
Yep, Elsinore's taking care of that, and our set's pretty small. I mean, it's five boxes.
Okay.
Isn't that enticing? Don't you want to come see it now?
I do. You know, some of the greatest plays. I was in a play by Edward Albee, and it was, all you needed was a table, pretty much. You
okay.
Know? Counting the Ways. And also Our Town, one of America's most beloved plays.
Mm-hmm.
You do with what? A table and a ladder or something is almost nothing.
It's pretty exciting, that
really
way.
Great theater, and it's all on you. But that's what actors are all about. Two things when it comes to the arts. I've said this so many times. I think politics is some of the same thing. Is it can attract the most incredible human beings you're ever going to encounter. Just fascinating, intellectually, emotionally, really interesting human beings. Some of the best people you ever meet, and it can attract the most idiotic cretins you'll ever come across.
Yes.
And when you look at Hollywood and the characters there, you know, you've got both. And I'm going to put you two in the first category.
Oh, right? I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm assuming that you're not idiotic cretins, and you are just some caliber individuals that we're all going to want to see. We're going to want to see, Zach Defoe and Emily Carlson in Gruesome Playground Injuries.
Yes, sir.
I don't know why I have a hard time getting that out. Gruesome Playground Injuries coming up a week from Saturday on the 19th at the Elsinore Theater. Go to elsinoretheater.com for tickets. Tickets range from $15 to $30, but you're never going to see it again unless we buy all these tickets and we get a command performance when we bring them back for an
extended
run. That
would be lovely. Yes.
Right? It's incredible. Hey, thanks for being here. Thanks for bringing the show here, and we look forward to seeing you a week from Saturday.
Awesome.
Zach Defoe and Emily Carlson.
We'll be
right back on Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Well, that was fun. Welcome back, folks, to Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. And I've already told my wife, sent her a text, we have a date night.
Good for you.
Saturday, we're gonna do the Elsinore and catch that play.
Good.
All right, let's talk about some of the topics of the day in the region. So I went to the SEDCOR luncheon just yesterday. And SEDCOR is the Economic Development Corporation, and it was all about hemp. You want to talk about hemp?
SEDCOR. I smell it every day on my drive home.
And that's just the thing. You know, that is the thing. In the Mid-Valley here, it's become a huge agricultural option for
sure.
All of our farmers, and yeah. A rotation crop and an additional thing that they can grow if the prices of other crops are suppressed, mm-hmm. You know, and they can't get the kind of margins they want out of grass seed or out of wheat or, whatever it is that they're growing. They can grow some hemp. So it was a very interesting panel. So kudos to SEDCOR, the nonprofit that helps us with economic development in the three-county region. But they brought together a panel that had the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Sunny Summers was there to get the kind of regulator kind of viewpoint from the state government. Ken Iverson. Ken Iverson is, I think he said fourth-generation farmer in this area. And if you're familiar with the Wooden Shoe Tulip Farm, that's his family, Iverson Family Farms. He spoke very well. You got to love farmers, man.
Mm-hmm.
You got to love farmers.
pull no punches.
He just tell it like it is.
You
and he
have
was
to.
Calm and matter-of-fact and very knowledgeable, knows his stuff, and we'll get to that in just a second. And Dr. Jeffrey Steiner, a PhD out of Oregon State.
Oh, nice.
So that was a very great, you know, little combination of good panelists to talk about different perspectives on hemp. Now, and we'd all learned some things, I think, in this discussion. And if you haven't been to SEDCOR luncheons with these speakers, I'd recommend you tape or watch the podcast for Newsmakers later.
Sure.
But go ahead and take your lunch hour and spend it with SEDCOR. On Monday, the San Luis Area Chamber of Commerce also has their forum. It's once a month, and it's the one of the public affairs directors at Nike.
Really?
Yeah, really good speakers in that series. And I'm sure at the Salem Chamber website, I think it's salemchamber.org. You can sign up for that or give them a call, and SEDCOR both. Great speakers. You learn a lot about the community, what's going on. Really good speakers. So this panel, so we're talking about hemp, and they made a distinction between hemp and what is cannabis. What's marijuana? Are you growing a bunch of marijuana out there, or are you growing industrialized hemp? We've talked about this, Dave and I have, in the past, about how really stupid the government was, 70 years ago when marijuana was kind of coming into the public policy arena, where it was mm-hmm. a bad, and they banned all hemp growing. Well, a lot of hemp is just fiber, and it doesn't have the chemistry, the THC, that gets people high.
Which is weird, because it looks just like cannabis.
Yeah, it's the same plant. And
does it smell like it too?
It does.
Yeah.
It can.
So it's hard to tell.
I'm telling you, there are so many things about marijuana. And if it's not your culture, you know, we're all just kind of growing up and learning about it right now.
Right, exactly.
And so there are probably more types and strains of actual cannabis or marijuana than there are, you know, wine grapes in this world. They're so different. So, but in the Willamette Valley, this whole discussion had to do with hemp.
Okay.
Industrial hemp does not have THC, or has a very minimal amount of THC, which is the part that gets you high.
Right.
So then it can be used in all of sorts of different ways. It can be used as a food additive. It can be used in ointments and rubs and lotions and vaporizers and all sorts of things. And it's not an illegal product. It doesn't fall into the same regulations in the federal government that cannabis is. So,
you know how you tell the difference between a hemp farm and a cannabis farm?
Tell me.
The cannabis farm now has a fence around it with a police light camera thing on it. And across the street is a hemp farm, no fence around it.
That is funny. They did mention this, actually, similarly, that people who are growing, you know, farmers that are growing hemp are putting up signs that says industrial hemp. You know, you see the crops
right.
Named along the highway.
Yeah.
It says, hey, we're growing, you know, green beans here. We're growing asparagus, whatever. And then, so it'll say industrial hemp, so that people won't go into their fields and try to smoke this thing.
Yeah. And then be disappointed.
Get to keep the trespassers off.
Oh, man.
So, learned quite a bit. So, Mr. Iverson, who, if we can get him on the show, it would be really great. He thought he'd try it a few years back as an experiment when legally, you know, the doors were opened to participate in this. And so, kind of got talked into it. And then when they found that, well, we really don't have a market, there's just not a ready market where we can just throw in a bunch of acres, grow the whole thing, and people are going to bang on the door and buy it.
Right.
Right. So the value in this plant, it could be the actual fiber, because it used to be a great rope fiber. They even made textiles out of it and so forth. But for the Iverson Family Farms, it's the oil. They produce the oil. So now they're vertically integrated. So they're they're growing the crops. They're drying the crops. Mm-hmm. You know, they're harvesting. They're drying them. And then they're processing them, and there's a few different ways to process, and some are more chemical invasive and intensive than others. They're using a CO2 technology, but they're producing, in essence, the oil, right?
Huh.
Out of that, they're just squeezing it out of that plant, right?
Nice.
And so he said he found markets, and it goes a long way. So if he gets a gram of oil, it can go into scores, or if not hundreds, of pills.
What?
So if you're not familiar, and one of the things, and they sell at the farm, if you guys want to check it out and go see Iverson Farm. So they sell it at the farm. They sell it to people who use these things. And he thinks that the market is a little bit oversupplied now, but perhaps a fraction of what the demand will be. Because we're talking about something that has the pain relief factor without the addiction factor of opioids,
right,
and without the high, right? So
which
people
is a good
who
thing.
Do not want to have fuzzy brained and do not want to get high. So he said they've been approached by companies that sell yogurt, sports drinks, you know, sugar companies, soda companies, all sorts of companies, because I think in the pipeline down the road, this kind of product, meaning the hemp seed oil, will be included in a lot of these things to help people's quality of life.
Wow.
And one of the things that drove him to start this and really look into this is a family member that had pain and was going through a fight with cancer. And they said they were recommended that they look into CBD oil. For those of you who are not familiar, you're going to be. I think we're all going to be. And CBD is the chemistry that is not the high.
Which right? is THC.
It's, right, which is THC. Very good. So we're going to have to take a break because I want to come back and say how OSU is involved in this, what the state is doing and regulating this in terms of they have to register new growers and so forth, and you won't believe the growth. Stay with us. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center. I'm having trouble with my mouth today. Welcome back.
I think what you need is perhaps some pizza. Right?
That's tomorrow.
I have to wait till tomorrow. But
tomorrow,
you know,
yeah.
I just don't get it.
Yeah. Sleep would help, too.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're talking about hemp and the SEDCOR, the Strategic Economic Development Corporation's forum just yesterday. Ken Iverson and Iverson Family Farms, he was so great. He referred to the industry as being full of cannabis. Cannabis, there's a lot of promises, a lot of people jumping in, and they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So there's farmers, and hey, we're going to grow this, and we're all going to make a gazillion dollars, and we're just going to grow it, and they will come, you know, and this is legal, and it's going to be an explosion of need. One thing they really didn't talk about it, and probably, you know, for sensitivity reasons, but they really never talked during the whole hour and a half about cannabis. It was all about hemp, really.
Huh.
And the plants that the Iverson Family Farms is doing is being used to produce CBD oils, and
which is really exploding.
Yes, and for good reason.
Yeah.
My mother is 89 years old tomorrow.
Oh well,
right.
Happy
yeah.
birthday!
And
tomorrow.
we're the ones. I told my sister, hey, why don't you look into this, because she has arthritis in her back and has for a long, long time,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. And So it's very helpful. And one of the things that he said he was surprised at, the people that come into the store are his age and older.
Uh-huh.
And it's aches and pains, and these things are used in lotions and rubs and tinctures and all sorts of things. And it's improving people's quality of life without being, hey, let's go smoke a bowl.
Right.
Right? So Sunny Summers from Oregon Department of Agriculture brought some statistics about how this thing is growing just exponentially. They can't believe how much it's, you know, they went from like 13 initial experimenting growers to like 5,000. I mean, it's huge in terms of every year they're getting more and more registrations and how many acres are being planted. So 62,000 acres, I think, in Oregon now.
Wow.
Are planting hemp. And
as opposed to
whatever else they were doing.
Marijuana.
Right? And some of these things, well,
because there is marijuana growers too.
Yes.
That are legal, that are,
yes,
that can do licensed. It by the state.
Yeah. And you know, like I said,
it'd be interesting to find out.
They virtually did not even mention them with the whole hour without even talking, because it was, you know, the government, the university, and one grower. So, and this grower now has the expertise and the equipment, and what a jump. You talk about taking risk, and things don't magically happen. It does take a fourth generation of grower, someone's experience in being, it doesn't, more so than what they were pointing out is younger people jumping in, getting some acreage or some greenhouses, and we're going to grow all this crop. Right. And to find equipment to do it, they actually dried the plant, which is all is problematic. You know, Mr. Iverson was like,
especially in Oregon,
you have to grow it correctly. You have to harvest it successfully before it gets wet and with mildew and things like that. And then you have to dry it pretty quickly. And they were using equipment that was formerly used to dry hops.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. So they dry it quickly through the hops process, and then of course the chemical process, and they control every one of those steps. But he said, if you don't do one of those steps right, you end up with zero,
ooh.
And that's a problem right now. A lot of growers in the Mid Willamette Valley grew some hemp or some cannabis, and it's gotten wet, and it hasn't been a good season, and there's concerns that some people's crop will go to zero.
But isn't there a 6-year overstock of marijuana right now?
I
heard that.
Really?
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me.
They could stop growing it right now, and they would still have 6 years worth.
So Iverson Family Farms is selling to the largest CBD company in the United States, he said. She goes, I know their market share, I know the size of their share, and I think all the demand today, maybe not tomorrow, but today, could be satisfied with 25,000 acres.
Wow.
All of the U.S. demand for it. 25,000 acres. You know how many acres in Oregon?
62,000
acres. So you're going to talk about people who have jumped in. So prompted my one question at the Q&A portion was, hey, state of Oregon, are you going to limit this? Here you have a crop, an economic driver, as it were, that could make a lot of money for Oregon's economy, for Oregon's citizens and so forth, with a little bit of management.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to limit this? Because if you go from 62,000 acres to 600 acres,
600,000.
Then you're going to have an oversupply that's going to collapse the entire market. Right?
Unless they go worldwide.
Yeah. And she said, no. Unless the legislature changes their mind and tells us to limit it, no, we're just going to keep issuing permits.
Well, if I was a farmer, though, I'd be looking at the market going, wouldn't be worth it for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Or,
wouldn't the free market self-regulate?
Yeah, you would hope so. How many people are going to jump into it? But,
yeah.
You know, it's one of those things, as Mr. Iverson was saying, farmers like, well, if this guy's making money off of it, maybe I should try it. Right. But not everybody has the power and the expertise to do the vertical integration.
Right.
And, you know, can a BS in this industry. There's like a lot of promises, but not a lot of people that know their stuff and can actually execute and help you create a market for the product.
I think it would just take a few farmers losing their shorts to have other ones go, maybe I won't do that.
That happens too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Just sometimes if you're in a public policy
just
situation,
like any business, right?
You know, maybe show a little bit of protection. Like, hey, this is great. It can continue. If we do this, it'll help it continue versus collapse.
Oh.
But that's the foresight that you hope that policymakers who much too often don't know anything about economic development or sometimes even economics. Anybody who grows it, let them grow it. So there's a whole nother section to this, because right now there's no market for Iverson Family Farms to sell the fiber portion. So the stocks, right? The actual stocks. And
well, maybe they need to make their own company of rope.
Or clothing. Somebody should. So
I've heard them make clothing out of it too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Makes great clothing. Yeah. So Dr. Steiner from Oregon State University, he's the Global Hemp Innovation Center Associate Director.
Wow.
Did you know we had a Global Hemp Innovation Center?
No.
At OSU?
I did not.
Very interesting, because this thing is, while it's been illegal in the United States, it has been legal in China. And it's been legal in Eastern Europe. And they are so far ahead of us in terms of uses for the fiber, right?
Okay.
Machinery that is able to harvest it, and infrastructure and, you know, processing capabilities, that they're all so far ahead of us when it comes to utilizing the fiber.
Huh.
So right now, this fiber here in the Willamette Valley is being turned into, just recycled back into mulch, right?
Pig food.
Yeah. Well, that was very interesting that you bring that up. It actually came up in the meeting. Because the FDA has not studied this thing, because it's been illegal, there are so many uses that are not allowed that might potentially be, but you cannot use it for animal food.
What?
Yeah, you can't use it because they haven't studied the effects on the animals and the amount of THC and is the safe and blah, blah, blah. So at this point,
there's no THC in the stocks of
hemp. There may be.
What?
Up to a certain fraction. So, like we said earlier in the last segment, that these different strains can have an extraordinary amount of THC, so people can get really, really high, like some of those guys in Hollywood.
Wow.
And then almost no THC, almost imperceptible levels, but some, right? And then heavy in the CBD. And even if it has THC, there's two different kinds. And one makes you want to just like zone out and lie on the couch the rest of the day. And one gets you kind of psychedelic high.
Wow.
And so all these different strains and chemistries, and American regulators don't know if about it. So can you imagine, though? He's producing all of this excess biomass, right? Biomass. He said 25% protein. They've had it tested in 25% protein. And yeah, well, maybe this is a feed. So you don't have to grow corn for your livestock or for your pigs. Maybe you can use the biomass as it's a byproduct of growing this hemp.
Pigs need love too.
Really interesting conversation and public policy conversation that we all now need to really separate, you know, this conversation versus, hey, pot is legal.
Right.
Completely different thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's some people very much in the agricultural and want to grow pot for smoking and things like that and consumption in that manner. But now, I mean, hemp never should have been illegal. It was a very big industrial crop in America, like in the 40s, and then got outlawed, even though it did not have some of it. You know, the strains didn't have it. All right. One more thing, because we're going to have to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk to Sergeant Mike a little bit about Veterans Week coming up next month. B-17 bomber crashed a week or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that very B-17 has been in Salem.
Yes.
So there's a connection here. Of course, we have the B-17 Alliance. We've had them interviewed a couple times here on Newsmakers. And they're refurbishing B-17 right here in Salem. And there was a crash, unfortunately. And the Collins Foundation is a foundation that is dedicated to preserving these war birds and these bombers. And they tour the nation and provide rides and education and tours of all of these things. And they lost a B-17. And there's simply not that many of them left for us to be losing them. Really sad tragedy, some loss of life in addition to the aircraft. Some people were being given a ride on it, plus there was a crew. Our hearts go out to them and the Collins Foundation as well, because those are good people with an excellent track record, and they have brought the aircraft to Salem many times, B-24s and 25s and 17s and the Mustang and I don't know what all else. But anyway, and I was hoping when I heard the crash, one, that there was no loss of life, which didn't turn out to be the case. And two, if it did crash, it was no longer airworthy. Perhaps the B-17 Alliance here in Salem could be the benefactor of some of the parts.
Sure.
But this was, it was exploded in a fireball. So you were saying between sessions and almost a complete loss. I don't know if you saw the pictures, but they're just the tail wing section left and a bunch of crunched up and melted down metal. It was very, very scary. But all the best to the B-17 Alliance, you know, in creating, because their goal is to create this airworthy vessel.
And they're pretty much redoing it, refabricating a lot of the parts.
Yeah.
So it'd be like a new plane.
And the plane, as they had said, if you haven't heard the interview, the B-17 that resides right here in Salem in pieces as it's getting restored has the fewest amount of hours of any B-17 still alive today. I think they estimate maybe 50 hours on the aircraft.
Yeah.
And even though it has 50 hours in the aircraft, they're still redoing all of the panels, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of those rivets and all of those lines. So it's going to be really amazing. But that's a great loss, and a lot of great Americans flew on those in the war. Speaking of great Americans that had something to do with service, let's talk to Sergeant Mike when he was back. We'll come back after the break. We're going to talk to him about Veterans Week, and he doesn't know this yet, but we're going to ask him about his service. Stay tuned. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends at Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. We were talking about the B-17 that crashed a couple of weeks ago. It cracks me up. You always have a senator who wants to get his news in a name in the paper, you know, and this guy said it was Richard Blumenthal. It's like, well, you know, we got to look and see into what kind of inspection protocols and what kind of licensing and these old vintage airplanes and are they safe and who, you know, as if the FAA doesn't do that.
Right.
It's like he gets a politician who knows nothing about it. Well, we got to look into this, you know, and your name in the paper at somebody else's expense.
Those old planes are probably better inspected than the current planes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but they usually are.
And the pilot involved, we were talking during the break, had 7,300 hours in that aircraft.
That's a lot of hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So we welcome back to the studio someone who's no stranger at KYKN. Oh, matter of fact, I think he might own the joint. Michael Frith, Sergeant Mike.
Sergeant Mike.
Why do we call you that?
We did it at an event once because I really was a sergeant in the Air Force. And at one point, we just were kind of making a joke about it, and it stuck.
Well, tell us about your years in the Air Force.
Well, all right.
When did you join? Why did you do that?
I joined in September of 1964, September 25th.
Wow. Yeah. He knows his date.
Well, I think that's something the guys do remember, and gals. And I got out in January 24th of 1969, wow, right when Vietnam was at its peak. But I'd already spent almost four and a half years. I spent about a year in school, and then about 2 years in Turkey.
Wow.
It was during the Cold War. And you know, you dealt with cryptography and things like that. I just operated machines that figured things out.
Okay, he can't tell us about that.
Right. You know, he'd have to take you out back.
There's some secrets from the commies from back in the 60s. Well, thank you for your service.
You're welcome.
We call him Sergeant Mike, and it kind of sticks. And, you know, we don't actually stop and say, you know, he served. So Sergeant Mike from the Air Force is with us. And upcoming for KYKN, we're going to have a week next month in honor of Veterans Day, but we can't do it all in a day.
It's got to be a week. We've done it by the day for the last few years, but even last year there was so much more we could do. And so we're going from November 4th through the 11th, which is a Monday through a Monday. And we'll be broadcasting each weekday during that time from different locations, just to at people that want to honor veterans. The 11th will be our culmination, and you guys will be there. We'll be at Dallas Retirement and Healthcare Village, quite a place, by the way. And they have they've got about 100 vets
wow.
that live in one part of their complex or another. And so we'll meet with them from noon to 2. Warren will be there from 10 till noon doing a remote, but we'll just have an expanded newsmaker show. And we'll interview guys, and they'll tell their stories.
And of course, the 11th will be Veterans Day on the calendar.
Right.
So a lot of people, you might have the day off. You might not be a banker and have to go to work. But so that whole week, you're going to be spotlighting places that are popular with veterans, that serve veterans, and have opportunities to acknowledge veterans.
You bet. Sportsman's Warehouse is one.
Huh?
And they want to... they got a great location, easy to get to, and they want to spend, some time that day celebrating the vets. They'll have specials and such, and there's old places where the coffee will be out. And anyway, just be a great time, and we get to just say thanks to the guys.
That is cool. That is great stuff.
I think every week I should end just by thanking you for your service as I leave for the weekend.
There you go.
Hey.
Every week.
Yeah, Dave, are you sucking up the boss?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. Just got to do that once in a while. Yeah. Once in a while. Not every day.
Yeah, and the things that people, you go so about far back in history, not calling you old, Sergeant Mike, or anything, but Vietnam was a day or two ago.
Yes, it was.
And my uncle was there as well. He was in Air Force approximately through the same year, served 20 years.
Wow, congratulations.
Enlisted to F-111. Navigator, and
it's a big jump.
Spent some time in Vietnam on gun aircraft,
gunship.
And just he went so many years with so much silence, and you're like, well, we don't want to talk about our service, but he's proud of it nonetheless, and we're proud of him, and appreciative nonetheless.
I look forward to the stories that we're going to hear from these guys.
Yes.
Some of them really want to talk about it and tell their story. So I'm really looking forward to that.
That'll be terrific. Any other remotes we should know about?
Oh, not at this point. We'll have we'll let folks know along the way.
All right. So on the 7th of October, 2019, that will be my son's date. 7th October, 2019, he reported to Quantico, Virginia to start his career as the second lieutenant in the U.S. Marine Corps.
Second lieutenant already?
Yeah,
wow.
That's where he's starting, going as officer, and it's his first report. And
nice.
So I'll have to tell him, hey, you guys should all remember this date. It's the first one you went in, right?
Right.
You'll
never forget it.
Next month, it's going to be Veterans Week here at KYKN. So stay tuned for that fun week of activities and, of course, Veterans Day. Dave and I will be here. Thanks for joining us for Newsmakers. We're going to do this again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.